Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. Coming to you direct from the bunker today with all the games that were. Postman Pete gets a couple of weeks of reprieve to deal with Christmas because there's literally nothing incoming with four exclamation marks. But I am still wildly hopeful that Santa's going to expedite Betrayal of the Second Era. I'm a Santa. Look, if there's anything I can do, if I can be a gooder boy, I've been a good boy all year. Come on. We'll hit the crowdfunding vibes this week with FOMO Mofo and Sweet Baby Jeebus. It's a week for that. And then we'll breeze through Voices in My Head before giving someone the clap. On with the show. Well, clappers, it's been 2 weeks since our regular show aired. We had a bonus episode last week with the inimitable Super Trooper. My work schedule is quite aggressive right now. I work at high-level hospitality management, and it's coming up to Christmas, so I don't know what day it is most days. I'm pretty sure it's currently Sunday. I'm up early. The rest of the house is asleep. I've baked 2 loaves of sourdough, and so now I'm squeezing this in because I love y'all so much. It may be that we have a slight adjustment in our schedule over the next 2 weeks, but rest assured, I have 3 weeks off over Christmas and early January, and there'll be content for days because I am going to play all the games. So I've been traveling for work, which means I'm away basically Monday to Friday, interstate, away from my beautiful family. I'll tell you what, I've been taking games every time I go, and they sit there unplayed because it's 12 and 13 hour days. By the time I get home, put my feet up and work out what I'm going to have for dinner and have my second shower of the day and just make sure all my body parts are intact. There's not a lot left in the tank, but next week I am traveling for work again. I've got a game that's on my shelf of first that I'm taking with me, and I won't spoil any surprises now, but it is one that I've wanted to play for ages. It's one that I find super interesting and I can't wait. So hopefully I'm going to get that played next week. Anyway, for the last 2 weeks, I've had a really good couple of weeks for games, all things considered. I want to start with, I can't remember what day it was. It wasn't this last week. It was the week before. I had a game day. It was on the Friday with the boys and girls. And we started the day off with Merv, Heart of the Silk Road. Now, this has been on Super Trooper's shelf of firsts. He's still using the term shelf of shame. You know, I'm trying to coach everyone around me to just spin it around. But, you know, shelf of shame, that's okay. It's all good. I'm not trying to push my agenda. I'm not a zealot. This isn't the Book of Mormon. Anyway, he pulled it off his shelf of firsts. Merv, Heart of the Silk Road. It's been on his list to play for quite some time. I think he said he bought it 3 years ago, so huzzah, we got that to the table. And let me tell you, Merv, it is fantastic. I'm not going to bury the lead here. It is an excellent game. And in Merv, it's kind of a sprawling point salad-y sort of thing. It actually, when it went on the table, and it's got a very different art style, but it gave me Goo Gong vibes. And in fact, I sat down, was helping to set up, and then Dusty walked in, you know, a little bit later, because he lives a little further away, and sat down. He went, oh, this looks like Goo Gong. It doesn't look like Goo Gong, but it has Goo Gong vibes in that all over the board you have these, like, little mini games that you're playing, and each one contributes something. You know, in the middle of the board you've got this, it's like I think it's 5x5. I can look up a photo, but you know, I'm on my second coffee and I'm not photo looky uppy right now. I think it's a 5x5 grid of tiles that are randomized, and each one has a space for you to build on, a space for you to put a little troop on to defend it, and it's got an action associated with it. And we are going to march around the city each round. You march around the city and you claim these tiles, you build on them. When you build on them, you get to partake actions in that row that you've lined up with. I thought, no, that doesn't make any sense to you if you've never played the game. But basically, you're going to march around what amounts to a square-shaped rondel, taking actions based on the row or column where you stop. And the more actions there are in that row of a specific color, if it's your color, that's great. If it's someone else's color because they've built on those squares, that's fine too. They get a bonus for you using their little market actions. And that's the main board in the middle. Now, the kicker with this main board is you can build and build and build on it, but at the end of every round, there's an invasion. So anything that doesn't have a soldier on it or a wall built next to it is going to be destroyed, basically, at the end of the round. So you can build to your heart's content, but if you haven't built some infrastructure around it, then you're going to be rebuilding it next turn. And the really interesting twist and mechanic in this is if I build a wall and I protect one of Dusty's buildings, I get a bonus out of that. If I build a wall, it protects my buildings. I don't get a bonus for protecting mine, but I get a bonus for protecting Dusty or Super Trooper's buildings, which is really clever and thematic in a way. It's like, I'm going to build some defenses. My neighbor goes, hey, man, thanks for building a wall. Here's a couple of shekels. I don't know what the currency is in Merv. And off you go. And then all around that, you know, you've got influence boards, you've got down the bottom, you've got spots you can buy into which give you endgame scoring for a multitude of different things. And on the right, you've got the trading caravans. And on the left, you've got the, it's like the favor track. What was it called? I know Super True will be listening to this going, it's called, I don't know. It's the temple track, I think. And if you climb the temple track, there's a myriad of huzzas all the way up the temple track. I loved it. There's a lot of different sort of currencies and resources, but one is camels, and camels basically allow you to take an action in an area that you don't qualify for. So for example, if you're trading and you don't have trading posts, you can drop a camel and go down there. If you're in the middle, in the center sort of rondelle, and you want to boost your action, there's a center tile where you can drop camels. And if you happen to be, I kept trying to use that camel tile, that center tile, when I wasn't lined up with it. You've got to be in the very middle of the rows or columns. If you take the middle row or the middle column, you can drop a camel in the middle and get an extra bonus. Or you can pull all the camels off there and all of a sudden your camelry is full again. I kept trying to do that without being in the row or column, but the boys reminded me very patiently three or four times, hey man, you're not there. You can't do that. So that's great, because what it meant was when I finally won this game of Merv, the Heart of the Silk Road, I had done so without cheating. So thank you, gents, for keeping me honest. That was great. I ended up actually having a combo-tastic turn where I saved up a ton of resources and I built a ton of walls all in one turn through a bunch of bonus actions. And I basically went from, we had a largely undefended city in round two, to a city that looked like Helm's Deep by the time I was done. And out of that, I got a squillion points. And it was fantastic and fun and something that I was looking at and building up towards. I'm like, is this going to work? Is this going to work? And when I took my turn, battleships, I was going to say bullshit, but it's battleships, Dusty and Super Trooper just kind of sat around the table just watching me build walls for 4 minutes and absolutely hoon around the Kramer track, right? Like, it was great. Merv, Heart of the Silk Road, was fantastic. The art is lurid and colorful and everything you'd expect from something that takes place in that era. Pieces are great. Production's great. I think we agreed unilaterally that it can't sit on the shelf for the next 3 years, that it's got to come forward again. Art by my favorite, you know, fangirl over Ian O'Toole all the time, Ian O'Toole Art. Fabio Lupiano is a game designer. He has designed a number of games that are quite good. Three Ring Circus is one of our favorites. I love Three Ring Circus. I think the way it ramps up and up and gets tighter and tighter is superb. I'm not here to talk about Three Ring Circus, but Fabio makes a good game. And that's published by Osprey Games. Merv, Heart of the Silk Road, if it's sitting on your shelf at first, get it down, get it played. It was really easy to learn. It was maybe a 10-minute teach because all the turns and all the actions are really fairly intuitive. We went on from there. We played a 5-player game of Flamecraft. Now, Super Trooper has everything Flamecraft because his gorgeous wife Buttercup loves pretty art, and his daughter Beelzebubble, who is the Peanuts bestie, love that kind of stuff. So we actually played a 5-player game. It was Super Trooper, Dusty, BS, myself, and Beelzebubble playing Flamecraft, and it's so cute, man. Those little dragons. You got dragon bakers. So the dragons are freaking adorable, clearly. The art is adorable. So the art's adorable. Beelzebubble loves this game. Super Trooper's got the deluxe Kickstarter version. I think the middle board is a playmat, and we've got all these beautiful chunky dragon coins, which have this excellent finish where they look all kind of worn and scratched up and looks like they've got an ink wash on them. So they look like they've been sitting in a dragon hoard for ages. It's really cool. You send your dragons around to different shops. if there's another dragon there, you've got to bribe. You've got to bribe the other dragon with some sort of resource, your choice, to get in there and bustle your way into the shop. You do an action in the shop, and those actions can get a little combo-tastic with other shops around the board. You go round and round and round and round. Certain things give you points. You can enchant shops. It's very cute. It doesn't really do anything new or different, but its table presence is fantastic. I will happily play Flamecraft again. I don't know that it's... It kind of gets mixed reviews, but I think those mixed reviews come from people who are overthinking it, and they're looking at it and go, well, why am I buying Flamecraft? You're buying Flamecraft because it looks super freaking cute. End of story. It looks cute. The gameplay is innocuous. You can play it with your kids. You can play it with anybody. It's easy to teach, and it's really fun. It's fun. Flamecraft is fun. That's a by, I think, Manny Vega, art by Sandra Tang, published by Cardboard Alchemy of recent Andromeda's Edge fame. Andromeda's Edge is a game that we will be talking about another day in detail. Once I drag my team to the table and say, sit down, take your Dwellings of Eldervale hood off, and let's play Andromeda's Edge. Cardboard Alchemy, great game. Beelzebubble, welcome to the podcast. After that, we played Through the Desert. Now, we've played Through the Desert a couple of times. Through the Desert is one of Rainer Knizia's 947,000 games. It's got that Rainer Knizia beige hex sort of look and has kind of a Cascadero. It's got kind of a Cascadero-ish sort of feel on the board. Yes and no, but anyway, they kind of feel that same sort of caravan-y, putting dudes out, trying to extend and expand. Let me be clear. I'm not good at Through the Desert. I know how to play. I enjoy the gameplay. I find it deeply tactical. You've got to make sure that that board state is something that you can get your head around and playing at. I think we played it at 4. That board gets really tight really fast because you're basically placing camels out of different colors. And, ooh, you want camels in colors that you can't discern? We've got lavender camels with pastel green riders, and we've got pastel green camels with lavender riders. Which one's yours? I don't know. I was black. It was easy for me. I had black riders. At least I could pick their black dudes. At least I could pick them out off the board. But the color thing is an issue. They look great, but when they're all together on the board, it just looks like Ronald McDonald spewed camels. Anyway, you're putting them out, and if you're putting a green camel out, it can't be near another player's green camels, because green camels don't like other green camels. You know, it's the Romeo and Juliet, Capulet and... Or coffee on Sunday. Montague and Capulet, they don't get along. Green camels don't like other green camels. They're fine with orange camels and pink camels and purple camels, because I think, yeah, there's pink and purple. So unless you are in a well-lit room and you've had your caffeine dose, it turns into a test for color blindness. But it is really cool. It's cool gameplay. You put two camels out and you try and chop off bits of the board and segment them out with just your color. I'm not good at it, but I did enjoy it. I think it's a great game. I think Through the Desert, I think it's been around for ages, and Super Trooper picked it up last year, this year. We've managed to get to the table a couple of times. It's super easy to teach. I find it very hard to win. And I find the same thing with Cascadero, in that for some reason, that sort of spatial puzzle just sits in purgatory in my brain for the first 4 or 5 turns. But I think repeated plays, I'm going to enjoy it a lot. That was Through the Desert, Rainer Knizia, and a plethora of artists. And then Saturday, Super Trooper and I got together and we had 8 hours of Aeon Trespass. And that might sound like a lot, but man, I probably could have done another 4 or 5 hours pretty easily. This was our reboot. I want to say reboot. We'd started ATO a few weeks ago and got to the first combat, and we got really close to that first combat, but we got wiped across the board. You know, I blame the fact that the minis weren't painted at that point, which, you know, makes the game unplayable, of course, and you're so distracted by the hideousness of these plain minis that how could you possibly make good decisions? But we played ATO, and we played, I want to say, 10 days worth or so out of the campaign log. I think we did 3 battles. We redid the battle that we got cleaned up for. We did another battle with Hecaton. We did another battle with the Hermesian Pursuer, which was very interesting because we got to see for the first time a second boss, because you kind of get to know Hecaton. You get to know what's coming. Sometimes you have cards that let you peek at the next action that he's going to take. And so you can kind of start to build. And I can understand why these games are so popular. I've never played a sort of this a rinse repeat boss battler before. I played one game of Kingdom Death and had a horrible time for a variety of reasons. I'm not blaming Kingdom Death. Kingdom Death, I'm sure, is a masterpiece of a game. But that second win on Hecaton we had, which was our third battle against him, you can start to sort of see what's happening and see the ramping up, and not so much anticipate, but position yourself on the board and go, well, I know he's possibly going to do one of these, so I want to make sure I'm not standing in these spaces when I'm finished my turn. We had a really good run. We had three strong battles that we won, and I think the last two were literally by the skin of our teeth. We lost a few Titans in the end. Losing Titans is not a bad thing. It's kind of a consumable resource. These are the big sort of beasties that you're piloting in a battle. Losing a Titan doesn't mean that you die. Your Titan dies. And luckily, they're kind of strewn across the wild. You can stumble across them and you can put more Titans in your ship. And we had a great time. I had a great time. I think Super Trooper had a great time. And Trespass, we actually, for all the game that's there, we looked down, we were done, and we were on, I think, day 10 out of, you have 80 days to win. And if you don't get to the end of the game by the end of 80 days, you lose automatically. So I'm not sure how we're going, being basically 12.5% through the days that we have, what we're looking at from an achievement point of view. But, you know, we kind of looked at it at the end and went, you know, like 8 days of that, and we've actually finished cycle one, theoretically. Finished or lost it, one way or another. Which I think, you know, you look at these games and go, how can you possibly? It's just so much. It's so much. I mean, I think the boys have done, you know, I want to say probably 15 or 20 days of Frosthaven, and they're probably only 60% of the way through. Now, granted, this is only cycle one. It's cycle one of five. But I feel like the pacing is quite good. We, you know, we're getting to see new things. We're unlocking new technologies. And because these technologies build on the stuff you've already got, the learning curve is quite natural. We're still missing stuff. Obviously, you know, I only learned the other day that when you have a critical hit, you get another free attack. We've had critical hits and moved on, and knowing that when you crit that you get another attack go is really powerful, which, you know, I think this inverted combat paradigm, which, you know, Into the Unknown, which is the publisher, talks about all the time. And I think a lot of people who maybe haven't played or don't like it, they go, well, they're calling it the inverted combat paradigm. It's a lot of words for just a few things. I think it's really clever, and I think it actually makes sense. If you haven't played ATO, the inverted combat paradigm is such that as your characters take wounds and damage, you don't have this diminishing capability as you do in many things, where you've got wounds that stack, or you've got things that I mean, your damage stacks, your damage builds and builds. But for the first battle, we entirely forgot to draw wound cards at the end of our turn. And these wound cards, you know, you think, oh God, what's going to happen? Am I hemorrhaging? Am I gut spilling out? Half the time, they're really positive. You flip a wound card and it's like, well, you have raged due to being struck and you get an extra blah, blah, blah. Like, they're really cool. They're really thematic. And I actually find the combat in ATO super interesting, considering it's four dudes on a map, basically circling around another big dude on the map and hoping for the best. I mean, we haven't come up against the Labyrinthian, Labyrinthosaurus, Labyrinthosaurus Rex, whatever his name is, which I think from the sneak peek that I've had is going to dramatically change the way the map works, because you are in a labyrinth, which basically has shifting walls and pits and all kinds of stuff that can trap you. But I think by the time we fight this Labyrinthosaurus, which will probably be the next combat we go into, We've learned enough. I think if we'd fought the Labyrinthosaurus, you know, two combats ago, it would have gone very badly, and I think that would have made for a bad experience, and something that's like, well, I understand, but I had such a bad experience, and losing combat doesn't mean you lose the game. It just, you know, it is what it is. Anyway, we had a whole day of ATO. My work schedule sucks for the next couple of weeks, but I think Super Trooper's got a month off and I've got 3 weeks off, and yes, we've got Christmas shenanigans to deal with, but you know that means we're going to probably get five or six really good big game days in there, and I know at least one or two of those will probably be ATO days, because I'm really enjoying it. And then, because it's Christmas, it's December, it's Sunday, December 8th at the time of recording, the Peanut and I have our annual tradition. We have the Exit Advent Calendar on the roll. Now, Clappers, if you've been listening, you know the Peanut is an ace at exit games. She absolutely kills these things. The calendars are a blast because each of the boxes basically is a room, to the point where we get the torch out, we get the flashlight out, we've got a peer in the room for details. And we actually had Lou at the table for a couple of boxes, which was great. Lou joined us for a couple of the sessions. And we're having to binge these, obviously, because I'm traveling for work Monday to Friday. So I got home from my work trip on Friday. The Pina and I sat down. We did three or four exit boxes in the advent calendar. And Lou joined us for a couple. And Lou'd never done an exit game before. And she was both astounded by how interesting the puzzles were, but also by how intuitive her little sister, who's 9 years old, was at picking these things up and going, well, the answer's here. And she doesn't do it through the whole puzzle. You know, these things are wonderful to do together because the peanut went, well, here's the answer for this, and then was kind of stuck. And Lou went, well, I think it might have something to do with this over on the box, because the exit games, like, sometimes you've got to go to the bloody receipt for the game for the answer, or the barcode, or no spoilers, but the answer could be anywhere. It could be in the manual. It could be in the box lid. It could be anywhere. And so it's fantastic. And this year's is no exception. We're up to date. And because I'm away again for 5 days this week, we're going to sit down and do another three or four today to get a bit ahead. We love them. Absolutely love them. So far, the puzzles have been challenging and interesting, but also fun. Sometimes some of the puzzles in the exit games, they get you down and you've got to do a logic puzzle. You know, like Brenda has brown hair and one nipple and Reese has three toes on his left foot. Which one of them likes sandwiches? And you're like, oh my God, we just go through it. We just skip those ones. But we haven't had anything like that. We had some really, really fun times. So that's Exit Advent Calendar, the missing Hollywood star this year. The Peanut and I are loving every minute of it. We're going to do some more today. And that is the games that were. Now onto one of my favorite parts of the show, favorite, but also my, you know, this is just the bane of my existence in the best way possible, FOMO Mofo. Oh, start with our usual disclaimer. This is not a comprehensive list of crowdfunding campaigns, but merely the ones that are done by designers I like, by publishers I like, that have pretty things and toys that I'm following intently and sometimes tick all the boxes. In this case, there are two campaigns that tick all those boxes. We're only doing two today. We're going to start off with Cthulhu Death May Die Godzilla Edition. Now, it's not called that. It's called something else. It's Forbidden Reaches, Hidden Sewers, the Tiny Teddies. I don't know what it's called. But it's basically Cthulhu Death May Die Gojira. I'm Gen X. I'm right out of the late 70s, early 80s. I watched Godzilla and King Kong in black and white 5,000 times because that's what was playing at 3 o'clock on a Sunday when it was minus 40 degrees. This is one that I look at and I go, oh my word. It's interesting. It's a really interesting time when I look at it for companies to be launching these Uber campaigns. Right, Cthulhu Death May Die is CMON. CMON's not lacking for money in any way, shape, or form. And it's, you know, we're now sitting 2 weeks out from Christmas, and there has been a crowdfunding in just like the march of the ants. Like, it has just been campaign after campaign after campaign of good stuff. And then I look at some of these sort of, I'll call them second tier campaigns for a lot of games that probably, you know, there's so many campaigns out. And there's so many campaigns that I'm not even looking at because all my money's been squeezed out of me for the next sort of 2 months, just both in upfront payments and Kickstarter and stretch pay on GameFound. And you've got all these games that are probably really good. Like the Waste of Parts looks super interesting, but I think they're only sitting at $100,000 after 15 days because they're just being absolutely swept aside by the monolith of Awakened Realms and CMON and Mind Clash and Shadowborn Games, who are releasing huge. I mean, Orange Nebula is releasing, I think it's called Vestige, which is the re-implementation that, again, looks amazing. It looks really great. The production looks off the charts good. And really, if it wasn't this time of year, if it wasn't, I may even look at Vestige for a late pledge when it comes around in February or March. But I really feel for these sort of second-tier publishers who really are looking to crowdfunding to keep them alive and to do what needs to be done because there's so much out there. And so I find it really unusual that companies like Awakened Realms and CMON are doing stuff this at this time. You know, CMON's campaigns are usually $3, $4, $5, $7 million. Their recent Cthulhu Death May Die, and Cthulhu Death May Die is a great game. I have seasons 1 and 2. I don't necessarily feel the need to buy seasons 3 and 4 or beyond, largely because Coop owns all of Cthulhu Death May Die, and I know if I said, hey, Matt, can I borrow season 3? He'd be like, sure, here you go. It's also fully painted and animated. He loves this kind of stuff. So anyway, Cthulhu Death May Die, Gojira, is currently sitting at $1.7 million US, which for a CMON campaign is pretty low. I think, you know, it's one of those things that it's probably suffering the time of year. And also, this campaign has everything. Everything Cthulhu Death May Die. Season 1, Season 2, all the Kickstarter exclusives, Season 3, Season 4, all the stuff. If you're a completionist, this is for you. It's got a 55-centimeter Godzilla Megature, because it can do battle with their 55-centimeter Cthulhu one from two campaigns ago. And if you've got you want to put them in the living room and have them do battle to the death in the living room, it will look like a boxing match from people who are stature diminished. These are gargantuan things. Gargantuan. And so if you want the Godzilla pack, man, you can get Godzilla. You can get everything. I mean, the new stuff package, I'm calling it the new stuff, which is the Godzilla tier package, which has the new season, which is standalone, which is great. All this stuff, I think, can be played standalone, so you don't have to go back and buy everything. But I think it's $460 just for the new stuff with Godzilla. And then it's $130 in shipping. That's a lot to ask 2 weeks out from Christmas, right? Like, I think this is the single person, no kids campaign right here, because it's like, and the second campaign we're going to talk about is in the same boat, let's be honest. And it just strikes me as such an unusual time to do this sort of thing. And that, you know, if you want the Godzilla pack, it's basically $600. And if you just want the Godzilla baby, you know, as an add-on, it's $95 shipping just for the Godzilla baby. Like, holy moly, like, honestly. If Coop didn't have everything for this, I'd be tempted, because it looks great. I love Godzilla. You know, I don't think I would ever buy a 55-centimeter miniature. I love the bunker, and I've got plenty of space, but I don't need to share it with something that's basically going to need a chair at the table. But I do love Godzilla. Cthulhu Death May Die is a great game. It's got lots of replayability. I'm probably still have another 50, 60 hours just in my Season 1, Season 2 boxes that are still classified as, you know, on the shelf for first, because even though they're open, there's so much content in there that I haven't touched. I won't be backing this, but if it was a different time of year and I hadn't just dropped, you know, a kidney and half of my liver, which thankfully is an organ that can regrow, to fund the other things that I've jumped in on, it would have been a maybe for me. CMON, Cthulhu Death May Die, Gojira. It looks great. And CMON, of course, their minis are always 11 out of 10. The second one, this one has me gripped by the short and curlies, and partly because of, you know, my current experience with ATO. But this is Enormity. And I think even if I hadn't played ATO and unboxed it and just gone down that rabbit hole, this is one that would grab me. Enormity is the latest by Into the Unknown Studios, who have just shipped Aeon Trespass, second wave. They're about to ship their other big monstrosity, which is called Kingdoms Forlorn, which is another game in that same sort of level of production. It's a little more Arthurian rather than Ancient Greece. They make big games. They only make big games. And the reason that I am probably all in on this is these games are not like anything else. Like Kingdom Death, like Aeon Trespass, like another one that I probably will look to pick up sometime in the future, like the Asopharian Guard. These are not games that you can just buy. And it's not about having it just because you can't buy it. But these games are experiences. You know, do you remember a movie that touched you right in the cockles? Like, do you remember watching the first Matrix movie? That was one I watched, and I don't think I breathed. It was just so interesting. It was so innovative in just, not in its concept, but in its brevity of storytelling. And when I say brevity, I mean it ended up being four movies. But that first movie, it just grabbed you and it left you wanting more. You know, these games hit me like that. These are not, they're not a game. I don't even classify them as a game. I mean, these are an experience. These are something that are memorable. deeply visceral experiences, like playing Elden Ring. You know, if you're a video gamer, Elden Ring is not a video game. Elden Ring is a life experience, because if you really want to get the most out of it, you're throwing out, it's 100 hours or nothing. And let's be honest, I probably did 80, 90 hours in Elden Ring. I didn't finish it, right? And I know that there are some other that go, you are going to gamer hell. You didn't finish that? Yeah, I didn't finish it. Sarah Lee's a gamer, and I remember when she found out that I didn't finish Elden Ring, she spent about 12 minutes castigating me. You know, and I describe it like having a 20-course dinner. You know, you're doing something that's a life experience. If you get to the end of that and you are only eating half of each course because you want to experience as much as possible, that's okay. You don't have to slam it all in. I really loved Elden Ring. I played it until I'd had enough, and I could, you know, I had a great time with it. Some of these games, you know, I don't know. Looking at this, we have 5 cycles of Aeon Trespass. Now, if they follow even remotely the same kind of pattern as we're seeing, we're talking about, you know, 8 to 10 full days to finish each cycle. So that's 50 full days to finish all 5. And I don't know if that's going to work. I don't, those of you that are on cycle 2, cycle 3, are going, oh, fool, you have no idea what you're stepping into. That's fine. But I can do that. But also, I know that if we get to cycle 3 and Super Trooper goes, you know, I think I've had enough, I'm going to be okay with that. Because, you know, yes, I'll have to play it four-handed, but I can do that. You know, the decision space of playing four-handed, it's not like playing Gloomhaven, where you have such deep interplay. It's a little simpler. You've got your weaponry, you've got your bits and pieces. So anyway, enough about these other games. I want to talk about Enormity. Enormity is basically Nemesis meets Aeon Trespass. It looks like you're in this gargantuan ship, which takes the place of, you know, sailing through the Mediterranean, for example. And you've got all of these panels that you're going to explore. And it looks a little bit roguelite in that you can die. But what happens when you die is your body ejects this little memory core, which can be grown into a new clone, provided you have the resources for the clone. So, which I think is really cool. It's cool and topical. It kind of mimics the whole Titan thing from ATO, in that if you die when you're on a mission, your brain goes boink and it ejects this little core, Battlestar style, right? This is back to the Cylon mothership to be reborn. I love it. As long as you've got those resources to basically, you know, 3D print yourself a new body, you can keep going. It looks really good. It looks dark. It looks dismal. You know, the aliens are all, they're not xenomorphs. This is not Nemesis, which has basically said, well, I'm just going to basically take xenomorphs and not call them xenomorphs. This isn't aliens. We promise it's not aliens. This is Nemesis. It's 100% totally different. This is a completely fresh IP with completely bespoke art. And it looks great. It looks great. And the thing I love about this is the thing that I'm loving about some of these new campaign games with, you know, things like Betrayal of the Second Era and Lands of Evershade, which just finished on crowdfunding, is they're taking the campaign and they're chunking it down into chapters. So each of these sort of bundles with Enormity represents about 15 hours of gameplay. And that you can be done. You don't have to play them in order. They're individual stories. It's like a little novella that you play start to finish. And each of them adds to the lore for the game, adds to the experience for the game. But you don't have to play 1, then 2, then 3. I'm sure there's 1 that you have to play first because it has all the introduction, all the tutorial stuff, I'm sure. But beyond that, currently I think there's 3 with the base game and 3 or 4 add-ons. And there'll be more by the end of the campaign. And each of them represents sort of a 15-hour commitment, which is, you know, it's 3 5-hour days, 5 3-hour days. I don't know what the save system looks like, but I'm hopeful that that's quite tidy. I'm lucky enough to have the bunker. I know not all of you clappers have a place like the bunker where you can leave a game set up. For me, a 15-hour commitment, I can set that up on Sunday, and by Friday I can be done, or Saturday morning I can be done. I can pack it away. That's a win for me. That's a week's experience. No problem at all. Maybe a little longer. If it's longer and I leave it set up, I'm lucky enough to have 2 play mats. We can sit on the dining table upstairs. But if it's got a tidy save system, I think that's also going to be amazing, because that's something that Betrayal of the Second Era and Lands of Evershade have been very clear about, is they've got very clever save trays where you can basically just plunk your whole character away and bring it back out. So when you've got to put your game away, you can. And with things like, it's one of the things that I talk about with ISS Vanguard and Tainted Grail, which are big campaign games. That's a 25-session commitment, right? It's 25 sessions, 28 sessions, or nothing. And putting it away and taking it out is a big deal, right? So I'm hopeful that Enormity's got a great save system, because it means it's a game that I can play with other people. But what Enormity's also bringing, High Five Mofos, is a true solo. You can play that with one person because you have companions and pets that follow you around that you can disperse out onto the board that will help. Or you can maybe play it two-handed. I don't know how heavy it's going to be. If it's anything like ATO, playing it two-handed really isn't an issue. Super Trooper and I are playing ATO two-handed each, and it's not an issue from a management point of view. So if you can play Enormity two-handed with some pets and companions, and that gives the depth and of choice and action, it's very exciting. The aesthetic on it is super dark. Like Alien 1, super dark, like monochromatic, lots of blacks and grays, not much color at all. And the art on the cards looks great. Am I backing? Hell yes. I don't know that I will be, well, I know already I'm not going to be all in, because all in is divorce material, right? Like it's like all in is going to be, for sure, it'll be $1,000. At this stage, I'm core box and extra, core box and sleeves, and the extra chapters that you can get. And that's probably where I'm going to sit, because getting all the minis for each chapter, it's too much. It's not too, it's too much to manage, but it's too much to store. It's too much to... And I look at that and I go, well, where I'm sitting right now, I'm comfortable. Taking all the minis means that's... Taking all the minis is probably eliminating another 5 board games out of my future life. And I want to touch on this again. This is another one where you've got Into the Unknown that is launching this literally 2 weeks out from Christmas. It's only a 15-day campaign 2 weeks out from Christmas. And it's expensive. And it's on Kickstarter, so there's no stretch pay. And I know you can pay with PayPal and get individual payments. You can split into 4 payments, whatever the case is. And you could take a small pledge, which will lock in all the stuff that's exclusive, because there are some exclusives that you only get if you pledge now, not during the pledge manager. You take a small pledge, and then pledge manager, you can open it up. They're probably going to go to GameFound, because that's where they went for their other games, which will give you stretch pay options for the extra stuff. But I find it really interesting that they are launching before Christmas, where realistically, your minimum commitment is, 85 euros, so $130 Australian. That's not terrible. Right? So your base pledge is about $130, $140 Australian, something like that. And that's fine. You can actually pledge that. It goes in, and then you can get the rest of the pledge manager. Which, if it's on GameFound, you'll have access to stretch pay. The only thing I can think from a business point of view, you know, when we talk about business strategy and the release schedule of your product is so important with this stuff, is that, and this is not a slight, this is just me trying to assess it from a business standpoint, is that Into the Unknown is currently delivering ATO. They're about to deliver Kingdoms Forlorn, which means they are a long way from their last cash injection. Long way, because these things were launched 2-3 years ago in some cases. I know that there are a lot of late pledges for both of those things that came up, but the initial pledge for wave one and whatnot for these things was 2 or 3 years ago, I think. I think this is a cash flow mechanic where we're going to launch before Christmas. We're coming to the end of the calendar year. We need a small injection, which is probably what they're going to get, because I'm looking at, you know, Enormity's currently sitting at $1.6 million Australian. I know that's not a small cash injection, but it probably is when you look at the global cost that they've got. I am hopeful that this small cash injection is going to be contributed mostly towards Enormity, but as a business, your cash flow is yours to manage. You're not meant to, under Kickstarter rules, use funds from one to finance another, but realistically in business, your money is your money and you need to manage it to run your business. So I actually think this is a mechanic to top up the coffers, and then the pledge manager you watch, it'll open in February or March, and this, you know, 1.6 million, which could go up in the next 10 days, but probably won't a lot because it's Christmas, could jump to $4, $5, and $6 million. Because it's 2 months after Christmas, everyone's recovered from everything they've had to spend to get through the Christmas period, and you've got stretch pay options. It's exciting. It's an exciting looking game. I am probably going to be mostly in on this, depending on where it all lands. and I will be taking some now to get it, to get the special FOMO-y stuff, and then we'll assess sort of my options when it hits Pledge Manager next year for how I want to round that out. Because with ATO, I have the playmat, I think I have everything fancy for ATO. I have the special map tiles, I have all the minis, I have all the god forms, I even have the optional nymphs on the way, because the minis are gorgeous. The minis are gorgeous, and I love the lore. I don't know how I'm going to feel about the lore on this. You know, Enormity looks more like a short run, sort of quick fire alien-esque, so I probably will be happy with standees for a lot of that stuff, but yes, that is coming. I am in at some level. And just want to round out FOMO Mofo with a quick update on Lands of Evershade. This finished last week. It finished at $7.4 million US, which is massive. And, you know, that's Awakened Realms. That's what they do. Where I ended up in my contribution to their $7.4 million, I went all in gameplay. So anything gameplay I went in on, which I think included the companions or pets or something, because they're a gameplay component, and I took the sleeves. Because this is the kind of thing, unlike, I didn't take the sleeve box or buy sleeves for Aeon Trespass. We're only sleeving the cards that are in constant play for that, because there are 10 million of them. And once you sleeve them, they're not going back in the box. But Awakened Realms tends to send a storage box for your cards. When you buy the sleeves, they tend to send this amazing storage box that sits on the side as an accessory. And once they're sleeved, they all fit in there, and they fit in there in a sensible way. So I'm all in gameplay and the sleeves, and I'm very much looking forward to that. And of course, they have sucked me dry for split shipping, because of course I want some of it next year. I don't want to wait 2 years for it, but such is life. That is FOMO Mofo. Things are probably looking to cool down a bit as we head into Christmas, but January, February look to be the season of the Pledge Manager. So our FOMO Mofo conversations will shift into that, and that is going to do it. This week on Voices in My Head, I want to talk about the cult of the new. This is not a term I coined, it's been around for a while, but the cult of the new is the behavioral sort of psychology we have of having to have the latest. And it differs from FOMO Mofo such that the cult of the new is not so much about missing out. It's more about just having. You know, I'm not one of the founding fathers of this cult, but I'm absolutely a card-carrying member, you know. And this is not going to be another half-hour ramble. This is just going to be a short, sharp one. But the cult of the new, where it strikes with crowdfunding, it strikes with pre-orders, it strikes with releases, and it's one of those things that I know if you're a gamer, you've been a gamer for any sort of number of years, or even just in the last sort of 3 months. Welcome to the cult, one of us. One of us. You're here now. We have decided what your middle-aged passion is, whether it was the Roman Empire, smoking meats, or board games. Congratulations on making a choice. It doesn't mean you can't also choose the other two. Super Trooper went the route of Roman Empire, and I went the route of smoking meats. So we've actually got the whole the Holy Trinity round up between the two of us. But the cult of the new is, you know, is that feeling when a game's announced. And that game's announced, and it's flashy and shiny, and whether the marketing's great or whether it just hits something for you, you know, and you go, well, I haven't got that. And that might, you go, Hammers, like, this is, we get what you're saying, you don't need to discuss this. But I kind of do, because I want to unpick it just a little bit, because the cult of the new is one of those sort of, I guess, dopamine things that I personally deal with very differently than FOMO Mofo. They're linked. And so, cult of the new, for me, hits when a game is announced, or a game is launched, or a game is released, and it's one, it looks like a quality game, but two, it's something I've never played. Sometimes something I've never even heard of. So going back a couple of months to the early days of One Man Clapping, we talked about March of the Ants. March of the Ants was a game that was released years and years ago, and by Tim Eisner of Druid City Games fame and Wonderlands War. And it looks so fun. It's a 4X. You know, I don't have a 4X. I have Voidfall. It doesn't really count as a 4X. I don't have a Twilight Imperium or an Eclipse or a Xayah. I don't own a 4X. And so I looked at that and went, oh, it's a 4X with ants. Not only does it look great, the gameplay is fantastic. The art style's amazing. And it was something that I don't have in my collection. And when a new game is released or a new game is announced, it's kind of the skin I put on it across the board now is it either it's my kind of game, like Lands of Evershade, or is it something that I don't have in my collection, like Avalon the Riven Veil, right? I don't have an area control game, a pure area control game in my collection. I don't have a huge collection. I don't actually have an area control game. So Avalon the Riven Veil I looked at, and it's by Shadowborn, who have only released one game, but they released a game that basically shadowed over all of its colleagues in many ways and created something and said, look, we know you've had campaign games. We know you've had narrative games. Here's ours. And they didn't say it's better than everyone else. Everyone else said it's better than everyone else. And so they released something that really was top tier. Now, they've never done an area control game, but if you're following the campaign for Avalon the Riven Veil, I think you might have one day left by the time this hits. We've already talked about it. It looks stunning. When I say looks stunning, like, it looks crazy good. The gameplay is interesting. It's got Blood Rage vibes without being Blood Rage. The minis and the sculpts are spectacular. The gameplay is interesting. And they're all in Uber Deluxe is like $200. $200 US, right? So $300 Australian. Which, yeah, okay. That's a lot. Again, at Christmas time, I've got to, you know, pinch off another part of one of my kidneys and go, here you go. Cult of the New, that was, you know, that had the twin forks of FOMO MOFO of, well, the Kickstarter version of this is going to be the Uber version. But I can tell you, if it didn't also tick that Cult of the New box for me, such that it's filling a niche I don't have, I would have passed on it. Because as gorgeous as it is, if I had a top tier area control game, if I already owned Blood Rage, I wouldn't be buying it. You know, and I know that Super Trooper owns everything Blood Rage, and we love Blood Rage. He also owns everything Ankh. We love Ankh. I don't own an area control game. And so those two things kind of work together to go, Hammers, this is a game for you. And as I said, if it's kind of the only the game that comes out on game days, as in we're going to a con or one of the cases, I can tell you right now, I'll be setting it up and I'm going to have a crowd and I'm going to have people going, oh my God, let's do it. Let's play it. So Cult of the New, it really influences my buying decisions. And again, enormity, which we just talked about. Although I'm really falling in love with ATO as a game, the depth of the game, the complexity of the game, I really love that because it's easily the most complex game I own. I have passed on the Nemesis games. One, because they don't get rated very highly for solo play. And a game of that ilk and a game of that size and a game of that buy-in, I have to be able to get it to the table solo and enjoy it solo. Now, yes, Nemesis solo plays. And there's a lot of people that love Nemesis solo. There's a lot of people that despise Nemesis solo. And so that last Nemesis campaign that launched earlier this year, I was almost all in on it. And just at the last minute, I thought, you know, I'm not convinced that I'm overly happy with the randomness of the combat for me. And I'm talking about for me. You know, I don't mind chucking dice if there's a lot of ways to mitigate them. I love too many bones. There are a million ways to mitigate dice too many bones. We're throwing dice in ATO, but there are ways to mitigate those dice both through your equipment cards and through the Kratos tokens that you're dropping. There were ways to mitigate the dice in the last Nemesis Retalion, but not enough for my liking. Enormity now is ticking that box of, well, you've got the similar situation to the Kratos pool. You've got all of these things that can mitigate the dice. And for me, I don't have a space crawler now, and I'm not counting ISS Vanguard as that. ISS Vanguard is not a space crawler. It's an exploration narrative campaign game. And yes, Enormity is also a campaign game, but it's campaign light. It's those short, sharp 15-hour campaigns, and it's a dark, visceral space crawler. And for me, it's not just the FOMO MOFO of looking at Enormity and going, that looks, wow, look at that. Oh my God, I don't want to miss out, because Into the Unknown does not go to retail. They don't distribute retail. You can either get on the campaigns or you can buy direct from them after the campaign is over. There are some retail shops that will stock their stuff at, and rightfully so, like a 90% markup because they've got to make money. So you've got the FOMO MOFO of, well, this is literally the only way to get these games. But then I've also got the cult of the new sitting there going, one of us, one of us. Because this is a game that I don't have in my niche. I don't have a space crawler, right? And I love sci-fi. Sci-fi and fantasy have been my loves since I was old enough to eat solid food. And I watched Alien, it was on TV at 8 at night in Canada, and my mom was watching Alien, and I said, oh, can I watch this with you? And she was like, sure. It was Gen X. I was like, phew. She was smoking and drinking at the same time. I was like, yeah, sure, come watch Alien. So I watched Alien. It scared the living bejesus out of me, right? And I love being terrified now. Like, I'm sure it's this PTSD of seeing Alien at age 8. I watched Poltergeist at 9.5. I didn't sleep for 3 months. So I love this dark horror. I love this visceral sort of look. And so The Cult of the New, it's one of my deciding factors now when I'm you know, buying games. You know, I look around the bunker and I can see a number of games like, you know, Wondrous Creatures, which, is it the most remarkable worker placement? No. Is it a really uber charming worker placement game? Yes. Everdell's worker placement and charming? Yes, it is. Wondrous Creatures is like real fantasy, though, where you've got these whimsical dragons and unicorns, and it's so cute, and it's just, that's one of the ways that I'm really looking at my new purchases now, and that's how I use it to my benefit. And there's a lot of ways that it works against me, though. You know, the Cult of the New is one of those things that gets in the way of playing the games we want to play. Last week's bonus episode was all about our aspirations for the games we desperately want to play next year, and it was a great episode, and I loved the back and forth, you know, Super Trooper, because he and I ended up having totally different lists, which was so much fun. But the Cult of the New is such that, like, a game comes in, and because it's new and because it's interesting, it immediately goes to the top of the list. You know, it's I've got Daitoshi. I've got one of a very small handful of copies of Daitoshi in the country that I happened to win at PAX this year, which is amazing. But it's going to get played before Food Chain Magnate. Because Food Chain Magnate, you know, it's not new. And it's like Merv. We played Merv last week. Super Troopers have Merv for 3 years. I think I've got that number right. It's a great game, Merv. And I like, so much fun. So great to look at. So tactical. And so the Cult of the New, it interrupts those meaningful experiences that we don't know we're missing out on. In the end, I don't mind. Because, you know, as you know, Clappers, I talk about my shelf of firsts. And if that first happens this year or next year or the year after, I'm okay with that. You know, I try to pick up games that I know I'm going to love. And if I don't play them for, you know, a year, year and a half, I am okay with that. The Cult of the New weighs into that quite heavily. And I think it's not so much for me, because I've only been modern board gaming for about 4 years. But I know the Cult of the New hurts a lot of longtime gamers in that, for example, we'll talk again about March of the Ants, which was on crowdfunding earlier this year. It's a reprint. And I know that there were a lot of people that were online that were really quite unhappy because they had just bought March of the Ants in the last sort of 12 or 18 or 24 months. And this was not just a straight reprint. It's like a version 2.0. You know, they did a lot of streamlining the gameplay. They updated the art. And there were plenty of people that literally said, March of the Ants is on my shelf of shame. But now I'm buying March of the Ants because it's a better game, right? It's a better game. It's streamlined. It's the art's great. You know, and in my own life, I'll talk about Pest. Pest was one of my first crowdfunding games 2-3 years ago. Not the first, but one of my first. It's a very dark Renaissance era game about the plague. It's got a sprawling board with brilliant pieces, but it was a game that wasn't 100% by the game company's own, by the distributor's own admission. There were things that they could have done better. So they have a Pest expansion coming out that just was in crowdfunding this year, and the pledge manager will open next year, which has the updated bits. Now, one of the things I love is that they've said, and this is really clever, they've said, look, you want the updated bits, it's like $20. And that's all the version 2.0 stuff. There's some color correction on some pieces. There's new city mini that didn't quite fit together properly. There's a change in and balancing in cards and factions. But they have said, if you buy anything else in this campaign, any other part of our expansion content, you can have this for nothing. Which is really amazing. it's really amazing, but what it's meant is, you know, if I want Pest the way it should be played, now I can just play it with the imbalance or whatever. There's plenty of imbalance in plenty of games. It's not like we're ever going to play it enough to go, wow, this faction is shit. Like, we're not. But if I want it, and this is the Cult of the New and the FOMO MOFO meeting in the fork of the road and going, hey, Amez, we want another $100. I can get it for free. Free shipping on the extra piece if I take anything else. So I will be in on the Pest expansions. Because, of course, the expansions all fit in their new tidy big box that they're releasing with the custom inserts and whatnot. And blah, 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 blah. Cult of the New. Guilty as charged. As I said, I'm not a founding member, but I am a card-carrying member. And I think that it has a meaningful impact on how we live our gaming life. And as I said, I don't think all of it's negative. And I don't think any of it, in my personal life, I don't think any of it's negative, really. It's just interesting how, you know, it completely overrides some of those things like Merv, which is a superb game. You know, I hopefully got SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, coming in. It's going to come in, and I know that the team, the boys are going to be like, let's play SETI. I've got Underwater Cities. And I've got Underwater Cities with all the really fun little components and the expansion with the double layer boards. It's a Vladimir Suki game that's easily, I think I bought Underwater Cities 13 months ago. I love the look of Underwater Cities. I haven't even played it solo yet. It's sitting on my shelf of firsts. And it's a game that I know I'm going to enjoy. I know I'm going to love. But I can tell you, SETI and Daitoshi are going to get played first. Is that bad? Not necessarily. It's just, it is what it is. And it means that the day I pull Underwater Cities out will be that, it'll be off my shelf of firsts, and it'll be an experience, and we'll all move on. I guess the one of the downsides, or one of the big negatives of the Cult of the New, though, is the last 8 weeks in crowdfunding has been really tough. And when I say tough, not for me. I am so lucky in my life to have a substantial amount of disposable income. You know, I won't use the word blessed because I'm an atheist, but, you know, if I wasn't an atheist, I would be using the word blessed. You know, my beautiful wife and I, we have worked very hard our whole life, and I know we all have. I'm not saying you got to work harder. That's not it. I just want to recognize the situation that I am personally in, where I am lucky enough to be able to say, you know what, Enormity's going to be hundreds, but I'm going to buy it because it makes me happy, and that's what I've used my disposable income on. I want to recognize, you know, OMC crew, that not everyone's in that position. And, you know, I've got three beautiful daughters. It's Christmas time. It's an expensive time. We are in a position where I can, you know, I think I hit the button on four rather chunky crowdfunding campaigns, you know, in this crowdfunding season, you know, that being Lands of Evershade, Revenant, Avalon, and it will be Enormity for me. And I am so lucky to be able to do so. But that is not something that is within the realm of most people. And I think that the Cult of the New and the FOMO MOFO come together, and they actually, it makes it very hard. It makes it very hard for a lot of people. And I know that these companies aren't talking to each other, that they're not. They're not talking to each other, and they're not saying, oh, hey, when are you launching? I want to launch. When are we going to launch? Can we plan it together? And I understand and respect the fact they don't care because they're running a business. But I would love to see someone like GameFound, who is not hurting for money, you know, to look at their release schedule and say, guys, here's the next 3 years. We're only going to allow 10 games a month. Now, again, they're a business. They don't care. They don't need to care. Right, it's not in their interest to care, because the more games that launch, the more games are successful, the more money they're going to make. However, spacing these things out from a business mechanic point of view is going to make sure that they capture all the dollars. You know, it's like when you walk into the shops and you walk into a local mall. I'll talk about our local mall. Our local mall has 7 nail salons, okay? And on a given day, you walk through the mall and 3 of them will be empty. And that means that the other 4 nail salons are maybe better. That could be the case. Or it could just be that the nail salons that are full are the ones that were in the right position. You look at the place that sell coffee. There will be 19 places that sell coffee. And I'll tell you what, I work in hospitality. In 2 years, 12 of those 19 places will be a different company because they go in there and the shopping center doesn't care. As long as you pay your rent, they don't care. You want another cafe? No problem. Here you go. Here's your fee. Here's your rent. Come on in. If they were to curate the tenants such that, well, we are only allowing 9 cafes and they have to be equidistantly dispersed around. We're only allowing 5 nail salons. We're only allowing 2 florists, whatever the case is. That has a meaningful business impact for your tenants, such that they are going to be there longer. They're going to be more prosperous and more successful, which means you can actually charge them more rent. And I know that's tough. You know, no one wants to say no to a 10-year lease for somebody. But companies like GameFound and Kickstarter, you know, they're big enough that a little, you know, socioeconomic responsibility, it doesn't need to be pushed on them. But it's the kind of thing that if they were to take a stance, and as I say, whatever the number is, they can't say it in millions because Awakened Realms is going to come in and do $10 million and then someone else is going to come in and do $140,000. And that $140,000 might be everything the small company needs to go, high five, we got our game off the ground, it's a dream, we're done. But when you're trying to launch a game in November of 2024 and you've got Awakened Realms and Seamon and Mindclash and Into the Unknown all launching multi-million dollar campaigns, you don't really have a hope. And so I think it would be a fair and reasonable thing for GameFound to say, okay, guys, you are our AAA tier publishers. We can only have 2 of you a month. That's it, because we're about bringing games to the table. That's our mandate. And, you know, GameFound's owned by Awakened Realms in part. So it's very easy for them to go, right, well, we want these 9 slots in the calendar. Boing, 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 boing. Happy days. They're not going to miss out. Seamon is one of their top tier partners. Seamon signed on as an exclusive partner for GameFound. So Seamon wants these 6 slots, no problem. But when you talk about the other really big moneymakers coming across, it means that, you know, if GameFound were to take a calendar, go, guys, this is what you can have. It's not just pay your fee and you're in, because we want to see this beautiful hobby. We want to see this amazing thing that we have built and become a part of have a very, very long lifespan. It would be a beautiful thing. It will probably never happen, but it would be a beautiful thing. Because I'll tell you what, this Christmas release schedule, there'll be a lot of people that are taking the bare minimum pledge and hoping that by the time the pledge manager comes around that they've got what it needs to get on board. Because the FOMO is real and the cult of the new is real. And some of these games, this is the only way you can get them. And now that doesn't mean we have to have the game. You know, life goes on. My family has groceries. They've got a place to live. My daughter can attend ballet. My other daughter can attend Girl Guides. We have 3 cars in the driveway. What are we working for? What are we getting out of bed and working here? You know, last week was 60 hours for me. It was a big week. What are we working our 30, 40, 50, 60, 90 hours a week for? If not for these moments of amazingness that we bring back to our life, you know, and that could be taking your kids to the circus. It could be dinner with your wife. For everyone who's listening right here, it's board games, right? So I'm not pointing the finger at GameFound and Kickstarter. They're a business. I'm just saying it would be a wonderful thing if there was a little more sort of scheduling such that this last sort of 8 weeks of schedule would be just a little more accessible, a little more attainable for a wider audience. And now clearly there's a lot of us that have jumped in, because what do we decide? You know, Lands of Evershade was on $7.8 million. I would take a punt to say most of those are going to be people in my position or single adults who don't have a lot of kids or any kids or wives or live at home. I live with their parents still, because these are expensive buys 6-8 weeks out from Christmas. Anyway, not a lecture, just saying. Cult of the New. It's a real thing, and it's like I've got the two bits of my conscience. You know, it's not an angel and a devil for me. On one shoulder, I've got the FOMO mofo, and on the other shoulder, I've got the Cult of the New going, buy it. I'm lucky enough to be able to do so. Anyway, that's Voices in My Head for the week. Now we're going to give someone the clap. This week's clap goes to something that makes my life so much easier as a board gamer, particularly a board gamer who loves minis. I do love minis. I love painting minis. I've been around for ages, and I'm sure we've all got them in our cupboard or on our shelf. Man, that is contrast paints or speed paints. Whether you are a Citadel or a Vallejo or an Army speed paint or whatever it is, contrast paints are the shit. Let me tell you, I've got Hecaton looking like not quite $1 million. We'll call it 900,047. And I haven't had to spend dozens and dozens of hours. I think on Hecaton, I've probably spent a grand sum total of about 45 minutes. I've got another 15 minutes to go, and I'm going to call it a day. And it will have depth, it will have detail, it will have highlights, it will have shading, and the base will be done, it'll be varnished. Personally, I use contrast. That's because I was a Warhammer player many years ago, and so I use Citadel paints. But whatever your poison is, man, speed paints, thank you. If you don't know how to slap chop, go watch a couple of videos on slap chop. It's not for every mini. I personally use a hybrid model where I use a little bit of slap chop. I do a two coat base, and then I use the contrast paints, and then I do three or four layers on top of that of highlights and, you know, little Nuln oil and whatnot. So really, I've probably got about six steps. I've got, you know, the two base primers, the two speed kits, the two contrast layers, and then two or three layers of highlights and we'll call them toppings. But man, contrast paints, this clap goes out to you. You have saved me hundreds of hours. And that concludes this week's Incoherent Ramblings. As we head into Christmas with my work schedule, this may get a little hit and miss. My next 2 weeks are really, really heavy. I don't know how many games I'm going to have to talk about. I don't know how much content I'm going to have. However, there's at least one more bonus episode coming before the end of the year with Super Troopers, so stay tuned for that. I have several weeks off over Christmas and New Year's, and I'm going to play all the games. You can reach us on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email One Man Clapping with a W. That's WONManClapping@gmail.com, as in I have won all the games. You can Instagram me on One the Number Man Clapping. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426. There are four of us in there now. Next year, I promise, we're going to get more. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, is the Guild is going to go live. And I will keep plying you with empty promises until then. Thank you as always for your time. This episode has been brought to you by a crippling desire to be unemployed. My OnlyFans page is not taking off. Apparently there are no middle-aged belly button fetishists out there. I thought for sure I had a niche. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And remember, time is a resource and we're all living in a Uwe Rosenberg game. Spend it wisely, spend it quickly, because it could be gone. Hopefully spend it with games. Peace out, mofos. So, if I trim 2 minutes off every toilet trip this week, by the end of the week, I can play an extra 40% of a game of Harmonies. God, toilet trips are zen time. All right, let's do this.